Welcome to the Dialogues Podcast, brought to you by the Center for Asian American Christianity at Princeton Theological Seminary. This podcast features the voices of Asian American scholars, ministry leaders, and activists in an ongoing dialogue about theology and ministry. We provide Asian American ministry leaders with a forum for dialogue, support, and critical reflection on ministry by Asian Americans, especially in Asian American ecclesial contexts.
My name is Dr. David Chow. I direct the Center for Asian American Christianity. I'm really happy to be hosting our continuing and ongoing series of online talks in the Dialogues in Asian American Theology and Ministry series. This is an ongoing series that provides Asian American ministry leaders with a forum for dialogue, support, and critical reflection on ministry by Asian Americans, especially in Asian American ecclesial contexts. Attendees in the hybrid dialogues gatherings are highly encouraged to share their thoughts and ask questions as we dialogue with our featured speakers. Today's presentation is titled A New Narrative for Theological Education from the Chinese Diaspora, and it is my great pleasure to introduce our featured speaker for this evening, Dr. Chloe Sun. Dr. Chloe Sun is the professor of Old Testament and the program director of the Chinese Study Center at Fuller Seminary. Previously, she has taught and served as the academic dean at Lagos Evangelical Seminary, a Chinese language seminary in the U.S. targeting Chinese-speaking students. She publishes in both Chinese and English, as well as conducts Bible seminars internationally. Her recent publications include Attempt Great Things for God, Theological Education in Diaspora, and Conspicuous in His Absence, Studies in the Song of Songs and Esther. Her passion is to communicate scripture creatively so that lives can be transformed. Chloe, the floor is yours. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Chow. Should I call you David or Dr. Chow? Well, hi, everyone. Good evening if you're in the East Coast. Good afternoon if you're somewhere else. And good evening if you're on the other side of the globe. My name is Chloe Sun, and I'm really happy today to share this narrative with you. Let me share my PowerPoint. Okay, so my presentation is entitled A New Narrative for Theological Education from the Chinese Diaspora. Calling it a new narrative, we can also rephrase it as a different narrative. And this narrative counters the dominant narrative. So let me give you a backstory of what this title is coming from. Since 2015, I was involved in a cohort with another 12 colleagues from different institutions, as you've seen in this PowerPoint. I wonder if you can recognize some of them. So every year we go to different cities. We've been to New York, we've been to Philadelphia, we've been to LA, we've been to Chicago and Atlanta. Every year, we communicate together as theologians, as theological educators, and we talked about the meaning and purpose of theological education. And as a result of this cohort, we produced 10 books, as you've seen in the picture. The first book is by Willie Jennings, After Whiteness, and the second book, he's here in the middle with the hat. The second book is by Amos Young. He's here. The third book is by me, the one in the yellow. And then Mark Jordan over here from Harvard. Elizabeth Conde Fraser right here from a Hispanic perspective. And then the rest of them are coming out So every year we have 3 books coming out, and now we have 10, and 2 more are coming. The purpose of this cohort, as I said, is to dialogue, is to discuss, is to discover the meaning and the telos of theological education. And all of us are from diverse institutions. So when I look at this group of people, and I was looking at myself and wondering, why am I here with this group? How am I different with this group of people? And how is my social location or my context similar and different from the rest of the group? And then it dawned on me that, oh, I'm here because of my social location as a Chinese theological educator teaching at a Chinese seminary in North America. And so that idea popped up, and then I realized, oh, I need to write a book about this. Because among the Chinese diaspora, we often write in Chinese, and the story within this diasporic communities is rarely being told in the wider world. And so writing this book in English is a way to tell the story to a broader audience. And so today's presentation is a way to connect the Chinese diaspora to this wider world. And I hope as you listen to the presentation, you can think about your own institution, your own social location, your own ministry location, and see how this narrative coalesces or different or similar with yours. A little bit about myself. I had 2 migration experiences, first from Beijing to Hong Kong, and then from Hong Kong to the U.S. And these 2 migration experiences have forged my identity as a person of confusion for a long time. But as I get older and as I learned, as I read, I finally realized I'm a person of diaspora. And so I resonate and identify with this new social location. So the book, I wrote the book entitled Attempt Great Things for God, Theological Education in Diaspora. And in this book, I named some dominant narratives of theological education in the West, in North America. The major narrative is a decline in enrollment, financial challenges, the marginalization of women in ministry and leadership in Protestant evangelical seminaries, and the tensions around slavery and its afterlives that define race in terms of black and white. So this is from Woody Jennings' book. And then there is also the decline of the MDiv degree. Ted Smith, in his book, he mentioned this traditional model of theological education, and he calls it Model M. This model is that in the past, people goes to seminary and then they get an MDiv degree or a professional degree, and then for the sake of getting a paid job in ministry. But this model has been broken down or gradually in the West, but not so much in the diasporic context. So the new narrative comes from the diaspora perspective. The word diaspora, I like to pronounce it diaspora because in Greek it's dias, but we can also call it diaspora. So diaspora means scattered or sowing. And this word has the connotation of home, abroad. There are many worlds within a person, hybridity, and many other descriptions about this kind of identity. So for me, I actually don't know where my home is. I know I live in Los Angeles. Los Angeles is my home. But when people ask me about my hometown, it's really difficult for me to answer that question because I wasn't stayed in one place in the past. I've been moving around. I've moved over 20 times in my life, including the two great migrations. So for me, the idea of home is fuzzy. It's not fixed. A lot of times the idea of home is tied with people rather than with a specific place. The new narrative for theological education involves migration, immigration, relationships, displacement, and globalization. I want to differentiate the word migration from immigration. Migration means people who relocate, people who move from one place to another. And immigration is more a legal term, people who legally immigrate from one place to another. But migration involves both people who move from one place to another legally and illegally. William Safran identifies six key characteristics of the diasporic state. If you share my identity as a diasporan, see if you identify with these six features. Number one, dispersal, either of themselves or of their ancestors, from a specific original center to two or more peripheral of foreign regions. I experienced that. Retention of collective memory, vision, or myth about the original homeland. Yes. There's memory about my time in Beijing. I have memory, a lot of memories about my time in Hong Kong and different memories about all the places that I've lived. Number three, believe that they are not and perhaps cannot be fully accepted by the host society, leading to feelings of partial alienation and insulation from it. Because of this identity, it's hard to feel fully accepted and identified with one group or one place. Number four, view of ancestral homeland as a true ideal home and the place to which they or their descendants would or should eventually return, given appropriate conditions. And this is not true for me, because my parents are no longer in Beijing or in Hong Kong. And so there is no home in Beijing and Hong Kong for me. Number five, believe in a collective commitment to the maintenance or restoration of the original homeland, its safety and prosperity. This may have some political connotation. It doesn't apply to me, but it may apply to other migrants and immigrants or diasporans. Number six, continued relation personally or vicariously to the ancestral homeland in some way, with ethno-communal consciousness and solidarity as importantly defined by the existence of such a relationship. So this may be true for some people and may not be for others. There are different people who identify or define the diasporic state in different ways. So they may not agree with one another, but one thing they do agree is displacement, relocation, migration, identity issues, home, and homelessness. Here are some data. More than 120,000 people have moved to the UK from Hong Kong under the British National Overseas Visa, BNO. So this is the latest update. Since it was set up in January 2021, after Hong Kong's national security law restricted its citizens' democratic freedoms. And the new law just passed, which would speed up this migration process. Most projections expect around 300,000 Hong Kongers will come to live in UK over the next few years. I know a lot of people, friends and family members, they moved from Hong Kong to UK. And a lot of people in Hong Kong, they're considering of moving or relocating to other parts of the country. More people live outside their countries of birth today than at any time before. The reasons vary. Between 2008 to 2014, floods, storms, earthquakes, and the like send 26 million people into motion each year. So this is a quote from the book by Sonia Shah, The Next Great Migration. And then in this book, she also mentions that there are other factors such as violence, poverty, persecution. These factors also motivate migration. It is projected that by 2030, China and India will constitute 45% of the global workforce. And by 2050, there will be 200 million people on the move. And in this book by Sonia Shah, she also mentions that migration is a phenomenon since the beginning of time, and it is not a problem, but a solution. Another book, Migration and the Making of Global Christianity, here is a quote by Jehu Hensels. He said, "Human migration is a fact of history, and the history of humans is one of migration." Here is minority world in blue and majority world in red. So right now, if we are in North America, we are here. And the red areas, including Asia, Southeast Asia, Africa, Latin America, they all belong to the majority world. So the diaspora community is not just the Chinese diaspora, but many diasporas all happen at the same time. So along with the process of migration, globalization, Christianity's center of gravity has shifted from the minority world to the majority world. Diaspora has a missional impetus and consequence, which is the propagation of the gospel. So migration and Christianity sometimes are interconnected. In my book, I mentioned this. As the number of immigrants in the United States has increased, and as the number of Christians in Africa, Asia, and Latin America has grown, a new wave is flooding the contemporary landscape of theological education. A wave of students from historically minoritized ethnic groups, as well as from current multicultural contexts in various diasporic communities. So this is a fact. This is what's happening in our world, and which has a lot to do with theological education. In the city of Los Angeles, there are at least 11 Chinese seminaries. So here are some of them. Some of the names: Lagos Evangelical Seminary, China Evangelical Seminary, North America. There is one in Taiwan. Get Seminary, which is in Covina, Global Mission Seminary in Irvine, Truth Theological Seminary in Acadia, Chinese for Christ Calvin Child Theological Seminary in Monterey Park, Gateway Seminary in Ontario, Agape International Leadership School, I forgot which city this campus is on. And then in the Bay Area, there is the Christian Witness Theological Seminary, Christian Leadership Institute, Relevant Theological Seminary, and Overseas Theological Seminaries. All these seminaries are using Mandarin as the instruction language. And I would say, I do not have the data, but I would say their involvements are steady. And this is a counter narrative to the dominant narrative decline. So I'm going to use Lagos Evangelical Seminary as a case study. And from this case study, I hope to have what concrete ideas and questions for us to think about regarding theological education and this new narrative. First, I'd like to define the word or clarify the word evangelical. Some people equate the word evangelical as fundamentalist. Others use the word in a political sense, evangelicalism. But for Logos Evangelical Seminary, the word evangelical basically means the gospel. It's a gospel-centered seminary. I use this seminary as a case study because I've taught there for many years, and I was an administrator and faculty there. The seminary is a diasporic seminary in the U.S., and it is the first Asian or Chinese seminary accredited by the Association of Theological Schools, by ATS. So this is a significant fact. The school was founded in 1989, but a lot of people don't know about this school because a lot of things that happened about the school is conducted in Mandarin, in Chinese. And so the English-speaking world is not familiar what's going on in the Chinese diaspora. The spirit of the seminary is attempt great things for God, rescue millions of souls. And so from this spirit, becomes the title for my book. The need for establishing this seminary was due to the increase of Taiwanese and Chinese immigrants in the Los Angeles area in the 70s and 80s. And pastors who were hired from Taiwan did not meet the needs of the immigrants here culturally. For example, the illustrations they made, illustrations back in Taiwan, they may not be relevant to people where Taiwanese people lived in the Los Angeles areas. And so many immigrant churches at that time, especially the Taiwanese churches in LA, did not have a pastor. And because of this need for pastors, there is a need for an ethnic seminary to train pastors for these immigrant churches. And so theological education involves migrants, churches, and pastors. Here are a few things that Lagos Evangelical Seminary pioneers, or charting a new path in theological education. First, it pioneers theological education that focuses on spiritual formation. And I will explain more about this fact. It stresses forming servants rather than leaders. It pioneers in using Mandarin as the instructional language. And there are other Chinese seminaries, I think they're following the example of Logos Evangelical Seminary. Logos regards the MDiv degree as the path to ministry. This has been the case in many seminaries, and now this model has been broken down. And so I'll talk more later. Logos supports women in ministry and leadership. And Logos students incur minimal or no educational debt. Logos launched a PhD program in Bible for future theological educators in the Chinese diaspora. To this day, Logos is the only school that offers a PhD program that is accredited by the ATS. Among other, in North America. So that's a significant fact. Now, let me expand what I just mentioned about Logos. So first is about spiritual formation. Spiritual formation is the core identity of Logos. And this has a lot to do with its founder and first president, Dr. Felix Liu. His signature course is on spiritual formation, and a lot of students come to Logos because of its emphasis on spiritual formation. So there is an elaborate theology of Felix Liu's idea or his philosophy on spiritual formation, which involves a shalom status. That's a perfect status in every aspect, in a person's relationship with God, in a person's relationship with himself or herself, and the person's relationship with others. And he also focuses on the confession of sins, the lordship of Christ, and he is gifted in the healing ministry, and he conducts healing ministries globally in the Chinese context. And a lot of people get healed because of his ministry. So I wrote his story in the first chapter. And if you're interested, you can read more. In the book by David Kelsey, Between Athens and Berlin, he introduces two models for theological education. One is the character formation model. The other one is the Wissenschaft model. The character formation model is the formational model, and the Wissenschaft model is the research professional model. For Logos, it takes the character formation model, and it also includes spiritual formation. And for a lot of mainline schools, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, maybe they will be they will belong to the research professional model. In Dan Elshai's book, Beyond Profession, he advocates for the formational model, and he thinks this is the model for the future of theological education. What I'm trying to say is that Logos, pioneers in spiritual formation, is not just a recent event. It's the ethos in the school's foundation since the beginning. So a lot of schools in the West are focusing on spiritual formation, but Logos has focused on spiritual formation since 30 years ago, close to 35 years ago. And the two scriptures that Dan Elshai quoted is from 1 Timothy 3, 1-7 and Titus 1, 7-9. I'd like to read a little bit of 1 Timothy 3, 1-7 to give you an idea of what character formation means. 1 Timothy 3, verse 1, it is a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, it is a fine work he desires to do. An overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but gentle, peaceful, free from the love of money. So all these character traits involves character formation, and by extension, it's also a part of spiritual formation. So Logos pioneers theological education that focuses on spiritual formation. Logos stresses forming servants rather than leaders. If we look at the mission statement of many theological schools, it usually has the word leaders. The verb may be different, forming, shaping, educating, equipping, but the nouns are always leaders. At Logos, many years ago, its mission statement has equipping servant leaders. But in 2019, it changes to forming missional servants. And there was a discussion whether we should keep using servant leaders or just using servants. And in the end, the Logos leadership and staff decided to use the word servant because the idea of a servant reminds us about the character of humility, gentleness, willingness to serve others. So Logos seeks to form students as humble Christian servants. I don't know if you are aware, there are a lot of immigrant churches, in the Chinese diaspora, has a lot of church splits. And a lot of these church splits are because of strong leaders. They're too strong and they tend to cause division. And so maybe because of this reality, a lot of Chinese churches, they're looking for pastors who can follow and work with others, not one who can lead. I think here there is a discussion point we can talk about. Are we, or should we form leaders, or should we form servant leaders? Logos pioneers in using Mandarin as the instructional language. The first instructional language was in Taiwanese, but as more and more people coming from China and other parts of Asia, back in 2007, Logos changed from Taiwanese to Mandarin. So the students at Logos and in other Chinese seminaries, they can use their native tongue to study. And this kind of school, like Logos, believes that using one's primary language as the instructional language enhances educational effectiveness and students' learning experience. Students can connect with other students in the Chinese diaspora who will likely become future ministry partners or supporters. If a minority students or ethnic students go to a primarily white institution, they may have less opportunity to meet other students from the same race and ethnicity. And when they go back to their immigrant or ethnic churches, they will have less allies. But there is a question. What do we do with those whose native tongue is not English in a school like Logos? So later I'll talk about the contributions and limitations of diasporic schools. Logos regards the MDiv degree as the path to ministry. As I said earlier, this is true for many schools in the past. But in most Chinese seminaries, this is still true. At Logos, the MDiv degree remains the degree for full-time pastoral ministry. In the dominant narrative, the MDiv degree is losing its telos or goal. The MDiv degree may become just like MA or other degrees as a way for students to discern their calling. MDiv degree may not mean to be a way to go into full-time pastoral ministry. But at Logos, this degree is considered sacred and it prepares the students for a full-time pastoral ministry, usually not other forms of ministry, but pastoral ministry. The special status of the MDiv degree at Logos is reflected in their spouse. The spouse of the MDiv applicants needs to be interviewed as well, because the admission committee members believe that when a person goes into ministry, it's not an individual decision. It's a family decision. And so the spouse needs to agree. So at Logos, we did turn away applicants whose spouse are unbelievers or do not agree or support their spouse to pursue an MDiv. So this is the special status of the MDiv degree. And then there's also full scholarships being offered or designated for MDiv applicants. That's another way to show the sacredness of the MDiv degree. While the traditional Model M is breaking down in the dominant narrative, at Logos, Model M still stands, though it may be breaking down gradually. That we will have to see. And for other points, Logos supports women in ministry and leadership, reflects that it's not a school that is conservative or limiting the role of women. It supports women in ministry. It also approves women, supports women to be ordained. Logos students incur minimal or no educational debt, and a lot of it is because in the Chinese context, when a person goes into ministry, the church, most churches, will have some kind of financial support. Or the students can apply scholarships from the school, or they can get financial support from denomination. And so this is also another counter-narrative to the that Logos has. Logos launched a PhD program in Bible for future theological educators in the Chinese diaspora. And this is a huge investment, but it's a start. Now, I'm going to move on to the contributions of diasporic seminaries. Contribution to missiology. There were 3.8 million Chinese Americans and 1.7 million Korean Americans, according to 2020 census. So that's a huge diasporic community. Immigrant churches become the space not only for religious gatherings, but also for ethnic and cultural preservation. With its population of 4.5 million Asian Americans, Los Angeles has become the hub of the global mission field. And by the way, Logos is in Los Angeles. The increase in Asian seminaries and the soaring number of Christians in China who desire theological education reflects a missiological wave that we continue to search. So if we are in a dominant narrative, we can target the diasporic communities because there is a huge potential there and there is a huge need for theological education. Pneumatology. Joel 2:28-29 is a prophecy about in the end time, the Spirit will be poured on all people, including women, the old people, and everyone. And this is being realized in the Pentecost in Acts 2. So what is happening in diasporic seminaries is a sign of the realization of Joel's vision. It's the realization of the Pentecost. And we can also say that God is doing a new thing and redefining the identity of his people. God's people is not just the Israelites. God's people in this new time in history involves people from all nations. I think this is exciting. Contextualization. The Eurocentric model does not fit all. A lot of people with the diasporic identities or Asian Americans, when they go to predominantly white schools, they may find struggles or they may find unease or trying to figure out how to embrace their identity and how to just think about their own identity in relation with the white or the identity of the dominant group. And so in a diasporic seminary like Logos, It prepares students to serve more effectively in immigrant cultural context. And some courses that are targeted for the immigrant communities. For example, the Chinese church history, Asian American ministry, practical theology courses that address the needs of the Chinese immigrant churches. And I'm sure in other seminaries, there are other ways to do contextualization. But for diasporic seminaries, these kind of courses taught by people who are bilingual or bicultural or trilingual and tricultural, they are more fitted to be prepared for their future ministries. Now, there are some challenges of diasporic seminaries. First, the internal forces, and then the external forces. For the internal forces, using Mandarin as the instructional language helps student learning, but it is challenging in faculty hiring because faculty needs to be fluent in both Mandarin and English. And even if we have faculties who are fluent in both languages, they may not want to come to a school like diasporic or ethnic seminaries. And faculty publication is another challenge. A lot of faculty members write, but they write in their native language. And so in the English-speaking world, their publications are not known. And some may think that they never published. And so as I lived in the U.S. for a while, and as I published in Chinese for a while, I realized I lived in the U.S. I'm not in Asia, and I need to have some relevance in this larger context in the English-speaking world. So I started to publish in English, and I see that God has opened a wider window for me to see the world. Racial diversity is a challenge, and the next generation of English-speaking students is a challenge because if we used Mandarin as the instructional language, we exclude the English-speaking students who do not know Mandarin. External factors, the China factor, it has something to do with the political climate. Anything changes there would affect students because they may not be able to get their visa to come here. The rise of other Chinese seminaries and programs is also a real reality. There are many healthy competitions out there. And then diasporic seminaries will be shaped and affected and impacted by migration and immigration. So if there is no migration, no immigration, there may not be any ethnic or diasporic seminaries in the future. But the fact is, there are always migration and immigration. Some of my concluding thoughts. The Holy Spirit has been and is working in the diasporic communities, and I am one of the witnesses. This narrative presents a third voice in theological education. Third voice, meaning it's not the voice of white-centered topic or Black or from Black community. So that's what I mean by the third voice. So in a way, this is similar to a lot of Asian American narratives that creates a third voice in theological education. This narrative decenters whiteness, and there is no margin-centered dichotomy as in predominantly white schools. Because in diaspora schools, students who speak Mandarin, students who are ethnic, they are not in the margin, they are the center. This narrative encourages a communal responsibility in ensuring debt-free theological education. So this is about individualism and communal responsibility in regards to finance and support, financial support. A lot of times, a Chinese student will have support from his or her family members financially, his or her church, and his or her denominations, and the school. So this is something we can think about or learn, or maybe extend to other contexts. The future of theological education belongs to the diasporic communities and the majority world. And so for the school of in the narrative of decline, maybe it's time to think about how we can target and reach out to the diasporic communities and the majority world and provide funding for this community to come to the U.S. or to do online education in their own place. So in my book, I end with the image of an estuary. Here is the river. Here is the land. And this whole area, and this is the open sea, is called estuary. Let me show you another picture. This is the real one. What is an estuary? An estuary is the tidal mouth of a large river where the ocean's salty tide meets the freshwater stream. It is a space with a partly enclosed coastal or body of water with one or more rivers or streams flowing into it. At the same time, it is also a space connected to the open sea. So I'm reading from my book. Therefore, an estuary is the transitional area between riverine and maritime environments, and so it is subject to both influences. So what I'm trying to say is that a diasporic seminary like Logos has a lot of fluidity between the cultural and sociological community because it is not stagnant. People come from diasporic communities and they use their own language to study theology. And so they're converging, diverging, and fusing together. And throughout this process, new narratives will emerge. So it's a very fertile space for a student to thrive without racial prejudice, marginalization, and there's great contextualization and prepares them to minister in the diasporic communities in the future. I'd like to end with a few questions for us to think about. First, how does this new narrative impact your school? And second, at a diasporic school, there is a tension between reinforcing a particular ethnic or cultural identity and embracing a global perspective of the kingdom of God. How do we go about striking the balance between the two? What are some specific ways we can do theological education that honors both ethnic particularity and the universality of the gospel? This is a question I've been thinking a lot. I love Logos, that's why I stayed there for so long. At the same time, up to a point, I realized I'm in an ethnic bubble. I need to expand my world to see God's world that involves all people. And for those who are here earlier, you know that I now teach at Fuller Seminary. It's not that a lot of people would ask me, why do I go? Why do I go to Fuller? And my primary motivation is to experience what God is doing in other parts of the world and to teach, interact with students and not just Chinese students, and also diversity. And so now I'm joining the dominant narrative. It's a narrative of decline. In the past, I can say that I knew about this narrative of decline. I knew people who are in those stories. But now I can really say I am in it. And I can see the advantage of a diasporic seminary and its potential in the future. But I can also see the hope in the narrative of decline if we pay attention to diasporic communities and to reach out to them. The third question for us to think about is, what are some gains and losses of a theological school that lacks racial and ethnic diversity? And how might that lack affect the culture of the church in the future? As I'm in this narrative of decline, and as I experience a new narrative of growth, I'm now in the middle of it, and I'm still trying to figure things out. So I welcome any questions and dialogues that we are going to have. And once again, I'd like to thank Dr. David Shao for your invitation for me to share this presentation. And I look forward to our dialogue together.
Thank you for listening to the Dialogues podcast. The Center for Asian American Christianity invites you to join our ongoing conversation on Asian American identity, faith, theology, and ministry through the Dialogues magazine, the Dialogues in Asian American Theology and Ministry Public Gatherings, the annual Mental Health Conference, and the annual Asian American Theology Conference. You can find more information and sign up for our newsletter at caac.ptsem.edu.